Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my absolute pleasure to have as my guest, Rob Schwartz. Let me tell you a little bit about Rob. Rob Schwartz is an executive, active for more than 25 years in producing, writing, and investing in entertainment and writing projects. He has founded companies, been appointed at executive levels in others, and invested in successful startups. As a journalist, his work has appeared in Time, Newsweek, Variety, and many others. From 2008, he was Asia correspondent and bureau chief for Billboard magazine. Recently, Rob edited and wrote essays for and published The Wisdom of Maury in 2023, a book that was authored by his father, Maury Schwartz, of Tuesdays with Maury. From 2007 to 2021, Rob was a scriptwriter and presenter for the Japanese national broadcaster NHK World. He worked on news and feature story scripts and was a guest on entertainment-related programs. In 2005, he founded Dynastic Records. The label's focus was to merge dance and rock genres with an eye towards funky and gripping beats. As a socially conscious outfit, Dynastic produced the first anti-war charity CD of popular Japanese music ever. Peace Not War Japan was released in 2006. The CD had a section on underground hip-hop in Japan, focusing on oppressed groups. Rob oversees the creation and promotion of all releases on the label. He has executive produced three feature films, Bernard and Huey in the USA in 2017, Putty Hill in the USA in 2010, and Stay, a Japanese film in 2018, and one documentary, Touched by Water, Canada in 2006, as well as smaller projects. Bernard and Huey was directed by indie legend Dan Mirvish, co-founder of the Slam Dance Film Festival, with a screenplay by Pulitzer Prize and Oscar winner Jules Pfeiffer. The work has won awards in numerous festivals, including the grand prize at the Guam International Film Festival. Putty Hill won a host of awards, and the New Yorker magazine chose as one of its top 10 films for 2011. Rob has been a regular guest on BBC World, NHK World, CNN, and MNET-TV to discuss music, film, and the entertainment business. And I'm sure somewhere in between all the balls you are juggling, Rob, you do find some time to sleep.
Occasionally.
Yeah, who needs sleep anyway? Of course, your father would probably argue with that point since he really emphasized a balanced lifestyle.
At the end of his life, you'll remember, he was actually trying to stay as active as possible. So he was actually trying not to sleep that much towards the end. I mean, of course he did because he was ill.
Yes. And I met Rob initially, it was through a Facebook group, Tuesday's People, which is a podcast by Mitch Albom. I had joined the group, and right after the end of one of my semesters teaching death, dying, and bereavement at Utica University, I posted how inspirational Tuesdays with Maury is, how your father's teachings have just inspired my students over the years. I got a couple of responses, and one that I didn't expect was one from you, Rob, that really touched me. You said something to the effect that I'm just glad my dad's teachings are living on in the classroom. And as long as I'm teaching death, dying, and bereavement at Utica University, your father is going to be a co-teacher in that course with me. So
wonderful. Wonderful. Well, I mean, as you're well aware, my father was a university professor and enjoyed it tremendously and created really strong bonds with his students, which we can talk about if you like.
Absolutely. As a university professor myself, I resonate with the way he built relationships with students, with the way he looked at all categories of their lives, with the way he was focused on not only turning out good students, but good citizens, with life lessons that they could pass on to future generations. One of the quotes in the Tuesdays with Maury book, you know, a teacher affects eternity. He can never tell where his influence stops. The old Henry Adams quote, and that epitomizes your father and I think all other impactful teachers that I've run into over the years. I know that's a big part of his philosophy that came out in the Wisdom of Maury, which you wedded in 2023. But before we get into that, it's easy to assume because of the popularity of Tuesdays with Maury that everybody knows who your father, Maury Schwartz, is. Tell our listeners about your dad. Who is Maury Schwartz?
Right. And I'll start from the basics because some people who's listening to this may have not read Tuesdays with Maury, certainly not the book that I released by my dad, The Wisdom of Maury, last year. My dad was a university professor and someone who was very interested in teaching people, but more fundamentally than that, he was someone who was deeply connected to humanity and could deeply see the humanity and the value in everybody. And I hope that when speaking to people, a lot of children would say this about their parents, but it seems like a lot of them don't when you talk to them. But he was somebody that was so filled with love that it absolutely overflowed out of him. And, you know, obviously as his son, I would feel that, but you could also see it and how he related to so many other people, including his students and other family members and people who were not family members and friends. And in addition to all of that, I mean, I think it comes through very clearly in Tuesdays with Maury. He had this deep insight into life and into what was valuable and what was important. And he had this incredible joie de vivre, this incredible energy and love of life and just joy at being alive. And that, you know, when he got ill, which of course is the story that's told in Tuesdays with Maury, it didn't dampen that joie de vivre, but it changed it. And we can talk about how that was.
Absolutely. And the thing that impressed me about the way he took the news of his illness was that he realized that he had very limited time on earth. And he decided that he was going to do what he did best, to use his end of life journey as a way to teach others about not so much how to die, but how to live. And what was really important, his end of life journey became part of the whole, I believe, the spiritual awareness that he developed over the years. And I know that also comes out in the Wisdom of Maury too, because he talks about that. He talks about the importance and the relevance of developing awareness and spirituality as it relates to us getting older. And that's the thing. In the 90s, nobody was doing this. Nobody said, here, I'm going to show you how to die. If anything, we were avoiding death. We were avoiding talking about it. It's like I think of the old Woody Allen quote, it's something to the effect of, I'm not afraid of dying, I just don't want to be there when it happens. Mm-hmm. And that was the attitude that most of us had. And he just said, hey, we're going to redefine the culture in terms of how we talk about death. I am going to show you how to die. And Ted Koppel came into the picture, and then Mitch Albom came into the picture with chronicling his and documenting your father's wisdoms and teachings and beliefs about life, family, all of that. And then he just said, here, I'm going to show you how to do this with grace, with dignity and authenticity.
I think that's right. I think that's a good summary of it. Yeah.
Tell our listeners about the Wisdom of Maury. How did it come to be? What is it about? And what do you want readers to take away from it?
I feel that maybe we should back up a second. I don't know who your listeners are. So I don't assume anymore that people know about Tuesdays with Maury.
Okay.
And if they don't know about Tuesdays with Maury, it's a little hard. It's not impossible, but it's a little harder to talk about the Wisdom of Maury. So let's talk about Tuesdays with Maury for a second. I mean, you touched on many of the things. I'll just give people the broad outline. So Tuesdays with Maury is a book that was written by Mitch Albom after my father had appeared on Nightline with Ted Koppel 3 times. People had been very interested in what he had to say. Mitch wrote this book based on his discussions with my dad. He didn't start writing it until my dad passed away. My dad passed away in November of 1995. So we just passed the 29th anniversary a couple of weeks ago. After my dad passed, Mitch started to write this book, very small book, as he always talked about, rejected by many, many publishers. And finally, he got it published 2 years later in 1997. Started out as a very small publication. I always ask people when I do Q&A, I always ask people, there's one person that changed all of that. Can you guess, Dave, who that one person was? Maybe you know the story well. This is after the book was released. It was a small release, wasn't getting a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. One person found it and everything changed.
I'm drawing a blank.
Okay, I'll give you some hints. This person had a very popular TV show as well as a book of the month club.
Oprah.
Correct. Oprah found the book and put it on her book of the month club, had Mitch on her TV show, and the book skyrocketed to number one on the New York Times hardback bestseller list and continued to hold that position for five consecutive years from 98 to 2003. It's, you know, completely unheard of to remain number one for that long. At that time, around 17 or 18 million copies. I think we've sold close to 20 million copies now. It's been translated into something like 50 languages, and it just became this incredible phenomenon and cultural touchstone, which none of us could have possibly imagined. I mean, Mitch also wrote a play. There was a movie where Jack Lemmon plays my father, and it was actually Jack Lemmon's last credited role. You know, it became this cultural touchstone. I think it has faded a little bit. Back, you know, in 2005 or 2004, I wouldn't have bothered with this kind of explanation because practically everybody knew the book or had heard of it. I mean, it's mentioned in the Simpsons movie. It's that kind of thing. So it was completely crazy to us how it blew up and how much attention was being paid to my father's wisdom. Obviously, it was incredibly fulfilling and, you know, satisfying to hear that he could touch so many people. And as you said, the book is talking about how to live and also how to die and the connection between the two and lots of other things. So that's the background with Tuesdays with Maury. And the crazy part of the story is that before my father got ill, between 1989 and 1992, he was writing a manuscript which he considered his life's work, which was about aging and remaining vibrant and engaged with life and engaged with people while you age. And he wrote this manuscript and he just completed it when he basically started to get ill and he wasn't able to publish it. And I had been able to talk to him about the manuscript while he was writing with it and actually had a lot of interaction with him. We can talk about my personal history if you like. I didn't live at home much during that time, but there was a time period I was at home and talked to him about the manuscript. And then he passed and I was living overseas in Tokyo, Japan. I rediscovered the manuscript in early 2002 and thought, yeah, this is something we need to work on. It needed some editing because my father had just written it. He had never had an editor and he wrote it over a 3 or 4 year time period. So there was repetition. There was a lot of things that needed to be cleaned up, but I decided to take on this project with the blessing and the help of my mother. And finally, we were able to publish it in 2023. That's The Wisdom of Maury. And it's really my father's, you know, life philosophy, which is very much encapsulated in Tuesdays with Maury, but expanded and, you know, much more stories and examples and all kinds of things are woven into this book to make it enjoyable to read, you know, newspaper articles and all sorts of things.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that we talked about before we recorded is that you wanted to keep the spirit of your father's voice, the way he communicated. And you did a really masterful job of that because, you know, watching him with the Ted Koppel interviews of Lessons on Living, reading Tuesdays with Maury, it was like, yeah, I mean, I knew that was your father. Just his, you know, openness, his conversational style, yet academic. I mean, he would teach in a way to me that he would present the information in a way that was accessible to everybody. What was his philosophy as a teacher? How did he view academia, how did he view the students that he taught? We talked about him being invested in humanity. How did that carry over to the way that he treated his students?
Yeah, no, that absolutely 100% informs his teaching style and his teaching philosophy. It's not that he wasn't interested in academia. He would read everybody, every thinker, every philosopher, every sociologist. He was technically a sociologist or a social psychologist, but he would read all throughout, you know, all of these thinkers to have an idea of how they were putting things together, the ideas that they were putting forth. But in terms of teaching, for him, it was really just about either two people or one person and a group of people sharing ideas. He really threw out from his classroom this whole hierarchical idea of I'm the teacher and you're the student and you need to listen to me because I know more. That was not part of his teaching philosophy in any way whatsoever. It was, we're a group of people, we're going to have a discussion about some ideas that are put forth by somebody or some book or comes up somewhere, and your take on it is equally as valuable as anybody else. And this is what I have to say about it as someone who's read a lot. And, you know, you should hopefully listen to me because you decided to attend my class, but it doesn't mean I'm right, or it doesn't mean that you don't have as much insight or more insight into this particular idea that we're discussing right now than me. You know, like I said, he threw out that hierarchical thing entirely, and it was all about having a discussion in the classroom. That form also was reflected in the content, because he taught, his favorite course to teach was called Group Process, and about how people relate to each other in groups. So he would also show, how are we relating to each other in a group and why? What are your expectations? You know, me as a teacher, you expect me to be this or that authoritarian. What do you expect from your other students? And of course, Group Process was more about, it was a sociological course, so it was about how do we relate as a society, but he would bring it into the classroom and make it very personal for the students.
And that's one of the things that I really loved about his philosophy. And I see the same thing as I teach my students. I release the hierarchy. I insist that they call me by my first name, if they're comfortable with that. And I tell them, if you don't think I can learn as much from you or more from you as you can learn from me, you're highly mistaken. Let's learn from each other. I have that philosophy in the classroom. You're not too young for me to learn from you. And hopefully I'm not too old for you to learn from me. I look at my students, every classroom that I have, as an extension of the community that I want to be involved in. And, you know, your dad talks a lot about community in Tuesdays with Maury. He talks a lot about community and the importance of community as we get older and as we age. His students were obviously, to me, a part of his community, as are my students. Right. The other thing that I resonated with is his ability to be vulnerable and accountable. I remember there was one, I think, journal item or letter that he had, reflection that he had put in, I think it was in the chapter on developing awareness, where he talked about an interaction that he had with a female student in his class who missed a class and violated, and I'm paraphrasing this, my own words, violated the terms or the expectations of the syllabus that I want you to make a commitment to attend my classes, but let me know when you can't be there. She came back to class and he asked her about it. Said, well, my mother died. And he had a very teacher-like response. He said, oh, that's okay then. And then he stepped back and he said, wait a minute. He said, I was totally off base. He immediately apologized, offered his condolences, and immediately went into reflection mode. Is why did I substitute the teacher response for the human response? What, and that type of transparency and accountability, particularly to in an atmosphere where there's supposed to be a hierarchy, it, to me, it was just fabulous. And it shows exactly how he viewed his fellow human being. He viewed them as equal to, and as equal than, not less than. And I think that's what made him so approachable, and why Mitch Albom took 5 of his courses, and why people came back to take his courses. It's
absolutely
because of how he viewed them. He viewed them as having potential.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And that's a wonderful example of his analytic mind. I mean, you're showing an example of, like, he's reflecting on, why did I respond this way? but it's also an analysis, right? There's this kind of response, which is, as you said, is the professorial response. And there's this kind of response, which is the human response. And to know the difference and to understand how each is maybe appropriate in one situation, but also one is actually more important than the other, is the kind of analysis that my father engaged in and is quite a bit in the wisdom of Maury, more than in, let's say, Tuesdays with Maury, which is just sort of straightforward ideas without a lot of analysis.
And you could see the basis for his life philosophy and the wisdom of Maury. And I was looking at that. I was saying, yeah, I could see the alignment with Tuesdays with Maury. And one of the things that kind of struck me, and I was going back to one of the interviews he had with Ted Koppel when he talked about, you know, we're not a wave, we're part of the ocean, which is really steeped in Buddhist philosophy in terms of the interconnectedness of all humans. I found a couple of things that I think were important as far as the book. You know, he talked about when you have a strong sense of a common humanity, you feel respect for everyone and responsibility to preserve the entire human community. He also talked about the importance of balancing between being in the spiritual world and being in the physical world. And the minute I saw that quote or that passage in his book, when he alluded to that, I immediately thought of the Ted Koppel interview where he mentioned that we're not a wave, but we're part of the ocean. So I could see just a lot of overlap. I could see where his discussions with Mitch Albom, how they evolved. And I could see both of these books being together being very popular in academia.
Actually, it's funny you should say that, because that's the way that I described the book when it was released. I said these two books are kind of bookends, and in some ways, ironic bookends, because they're very different in some ways. Wisdom of Maury is a lot thicker, a lot more explanation, a lot more analysis, a lot more examples, and as I said, newspaper articles and poetry, stories that he's heard or whatever, and interviews that my father did. It's all in there, whereas Tuesdays with Maury is basically just my father, just two people's voices, right? My father and Mitch talking. So in that way, they're very different, but they're really bookends because they basically contain the same ideas, the same philosophy. One is just much more explained and explicated than the other. They are really two parts of the same life philosophy. And let me just respond to two things, because you brought up two points, both of which are extremely important in the wisdom of Maury. When people ask me to summarize it, I usually can summarize Wisdom of Maury with like five or six different points or topics my father was trying to make, points he's trying to make or topics he's trying to address. And we can go through that if you like, but you've already pinpointed two of them without specifically talking about the Wisdom of Maury. One of them is community. He talks about it a lot in the Wisdom of Maury, building a community, being part of your community, contributing to your community. He talks about how important this is throughout your entire life, but particularly in later life, when you get to a point that hopefully you're financially stable, you have the ability, you have some free time, maybe to contribute to your community. So that's one point that's incredibly important in the Wisdom of Maury. The other point, which is maybe very obvious, he talks about it very specifically, is creating some kind of spiritual connection with however, whatever that means to you. He doesn't want to define it, doesn't want to define it as this or not this. It could be organized religion for you. It could be, you know, something completely different. However, whatever that means for you, he thinks it's important that you develop a spiritual connection and a spiritual outlook on life. So those are two themes in the book, which are extremely important, which you've already touched on without us even bringing it up directly.
What are the other important themes in the book, too, that you would like our listeners to understand? And I know one of the things that you'd mentioned is your dad being very prescient in terms of talking about orientations that are now very, very much in play today and very much a part of today's society. So if you could touch on, one, the additional themes of the book in addition to community and spirituality and the orientations, philosophies that he described in the 80s and 90s that you see as being very relevant today, that'd be great.
Sure. Okay. I feel like actually those are kind of two different questions, but we'll deal with the first one first. So usually I would outline five things that were not, I mean, themes is one way to put it, but my father's actually throughout this book is trying to encourage people and give suggestions about maybe ways that they can improve their life or live more vibrantly or in a more fulfilled life. So some of the suggestions are quite specific. I usually, when I would talk about the five things, I would start out with the two specific suggestions. We already addressed the two more general things, the sense of community and the sense of spiritual connection. The two specific things were, my father felt that for some people, not for everybody, but for some people, when they got older, their life just seemed to get drier and more serious, like somehow the joy was sucked out of it. And to counter this, he thought that laughter is incredibly important. So you should try and pursue whatever makes you laugh and integrate it into your life as much as possible. Again, it's a personal thing, whatever makes you laugh, whether it's being with friends or watching comedy movies or whatever it is. So he thought it was really important to integrate laughter into your life as much as possible and laugh as much as you possibly could. That's the first one. The second one is that my father had been meditating throughout his whole life, but as he got ill, he thought that meditation was extremely important. So he thought for everyone, it's not necessarily easy, and you don't have to sit and meditate for an hour. You can meditate for 2 minutes or 5 minutes, whatever is comfortable for you. But learn the techniques of meditation, and there's many different types of techniques. Learn what they are, figure out the one that's most comfortable for you, and integrate that into your life. So those are the two really practical ones, laughter and meditation. He then thought that, because remember, this book is aimed at people who are a little bit older. People hopefully have some financial stability, don't necessarily have to go to work every day. But even if you have to go to work every day, you could integrate these into your life. Then he thought that a lot of people just sort of drift through life. The expectations of society are put on them. You have to go get a job. So they go get a job. Maybe they don't particularly like their job. I think there's a lot of people in this country and in this world who don't particularly like their job, but they do it because they need to make money and they need to survive. So my father thought it was really important that you investigate yourself and focus what really interests you and what really gives you joy. You've got to develop that. You've got to dive into it, whether it's a hobby or an academic interest or whatever it is, dive into what really gives you joy and what really interests you and develop it. He also saw that elderly people or people over a certain age often stop making new friends, new acquaintances, bringing new things into their lives. And he thought that this was really unfortunate. So he decided that people should develop what's interesting to them. Go out and use that in the real world. Find other people who are interested in the same thing as you. Make new friendships. Make new connections. And this, of course, relates to community. Get involved with your community. If you get involved with your community, you're going to meet new people and you're going to make new friendships. And so that's five things, right? With the community, spiritual, laughter, meditation, and you know, figure out what really interests you, develop your interests and your connection to that, and that will, you know, open up new worlds for you. So basically, the overall idea was, you know, remain more engaged with life in a way that makes you happy. Don't force yourself to do things because Maury said, I need to be more engaged with life. Find out what makes you happy, find out what gives you pleasure, and figure out how you can, you know, make new relationships around that.
Yeah, and I think all of the points that you identified are points that are relevant today. You know, meditation has been researched. The different types of meditation have been proven to, if regular practice, increase longevity and helps us stay more engaged with life, helps us become more intuitive, more spiritual, finding things that make you happy. I mean, this is a big mantra of society, is happiness and fulfillment, finding things that are going to fill your soul, and walking away from those things that no longer serve you. And also define the culture based on your own self-interpreted values, that in terms of how you want to live your life. And I remember one of the points of Tuesdays with Maury, he talked about the culture of not being, you know, it was all about money and it was all about achievement. And he said, if you're not happy with the culture, redefine it and define your own culture. I mean, those messages that he talked about in the 80s and 90s and both Tuesdays with Maury and both the Wisdom of Maury resonate today. And people are still searching for what's going to keep them fulfilled.
Right.
and he is very passionate about what he believes, but he would never try to enforce his beliefs. He had this gift of, this is what worked for me. If it works for you, fine. If not, here's some other things that you can do. But he immersed himself as part of the community he was trying to reach by also showing that I'm going to be vulnerable enough with you to share what my struggles have been, how I did this, and if it works for you, great. If not, find something that is going to work for you.
That's absolutely right.
And his openness was because he was open to a lot of different perspectives. I mean, you look at just from a spiritual or religious standpoint, he took a little bit of, you know, Christianity, he took a little bit of Buddhism to go along with the Judaism. And he was, you know, he was agnostic as well, too, from the age of 16, which just proves that you could be agnostic or an atheist and still cultivate great spiritual awareness.
And to your point, this was proven by the number of letters that we got from the Ted Koppel programs. Of course, Mitch adds a scene in Tuesdays with Maury where he's responding to letters. And we actually continued to get these letters even after my father passed, but we got a lot right after the Ted Koppel programs, where people from all walks of life and all backgrounds and all different perspectives, you know, as far out as fundamentalist Christians or whatever, would write in and tell us how important it was for them. And what my father said was exactly what they believed. Even if he wouldn't have aligned himself with their belief, they saw themselves in him, which yep. was the key, right? Everybody yep. could identify themselves in what he was saying.
Yeah, I think if we can commit to witnessing each other's beliefs, witnessing each other's stories, we're going to find differences. But if we take the time to listen, not judge, we can find a lot of similarity amongst those differences. Right. And that's how we can learn to be tolerant of each other's views. And he taught us that. He reinforced that. And because he was open to a lot of different perspectives, and not just at the end of his life, but it was all throughout his life. He was the consummate learner as well as the consummate teacher. And that's something that can't be overlooked, because the greatest teachers I know, Rob, are the ones who are committed to learning. And I've always said that once I stop learning, I can't teach anymore. Once right. I don't commit to learning, my value as a teacher is nil.
It's beautiful.
From your perspective, how can readers of The Wisdom of Maury best support others in their lives who are aging or facing challenges?
Well, part of it is what we've already talked about. It is always community, and community means you're dealing with other people. And when you deal with other people, you see people in need, you know, whether they're differently abled or people that need all sorts of different help. And hopefully you can step in and help people who need help. I'm sure that's the answer that my father would give. And I can give you all sorts of different social causes my father was involved with. One story I love to tell is because it was such a big part of my father's life. You know, my father was involved in social psychology. He was also a therapist. And this is way back in the day. I mean, I hope that people are relating to this and it feels very fresh and, you know, present to them. But we're actually talking about things that happened a long time ago, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. So my father was a therapist. And at that time, one, therapy was not as widespread as it is now. And two, was very expensive.
Yep.
Insurance did as recently as the 1970s, probably even the 1980s. I can't be sure, but I know in the 1970s, it was not covered by insurance, any kind of insurance. So my father started in Cambridge, Massachusetts, a low-cost/no-cost mental health collective called Greenhouse, where people could just walk in off the street or make appointments if they needed mental health support. They needed a therapist if they needed someone to talk to, and it was entirely based on ability to pay. So if you had no money, you paid nothing. This was something that he ran he didn't run it by himself. I shouldn't exaggerate. He had many co-founders with him. There were three people who were instrumental in co-founding Greenhouse, and my father was one of them. And they ran it for years and years. My father was involved in it until the end of his life, until he could no longer be involved. And it continued for a very long time, even after he was no longer with us. I think Greenhouse closed only a couple of years ago. But it was, you know, him noticing a need and trying to meet that need for people. And obviously, you know, we all need to make a living. But in this case, you're trying to provide a community service and you're trying to provide a service for the people who really need it. Wealthy people could afford to hire a therapist if they wanted to, but people who didn't have the means could not. So he saw that need and he fulfilled it. And obviously that would be his general advice to people about serving the community. But as we've emphasized many times, both you have said it and I've said it in this discussion, you have to do what's comfortable for you.
Yeah.
You can't force yourself like, I need to be a good person. So I need to go out and do this and it's making me miserable. That's not the way to go, right? You need to do what's comfortable for you and also what you feel is helping people, is reaching out to people who need help.
You know, your father was a man of his time and he was a man ahead of his time. I look at him as being a true visionary. He saw things that he saw a need to have low cost or affordable mental health treatment. And now you have other mental health clinics that will go on a fee for, you know, sliding fee scale. But he saw all this before a lot of people saw the need for that. And I tell my students, he's a true visionary in terms of what he saw needed. He was able to enter his past, look at the present and see how that was going to work and say, well, and look into the future. I mean, he was able to do that quite nicely. And I know he talks about honoring the past, present, and future too, as part of growing older and as part of developing and as part of creating awareness with terms of ourselves and in terms of our relationship to the world around us. If your father was around today, if there's anything else he would want to tell humanity, what would his ultimate message be to humanity today?
Okay, I'll answer that question. The answer to that question is easy because, you know, it's in Tuesdays with Maury. He quotes W.H. Auden, which would specifically respond to that question. And the W.H. Auden quote is, love each other or perish. This is very evident in today's society. If we can't love each other and take care of each other, both as a small community, as a larger community, as a country, and as a world, then we're simply not going to survive. We're going to perish as a race. So it's a choice, you know, do you want to take care of the people around you and love and respect the people around you, or do you want the race to perish? That one is pretty clear cut. The story I want to tell you is the question I get a lot is, why do you think my dad, Maury, was so connected to humanity and so sensitive to other people and their needs? And there is actually an answer to that question. For a lot of people, you can never pick apart their life and figure out why they were the way they were. But for my father, there is an answer, and it also relates to therapy as well. So my father lost, you probably know this because it's both in Tuesdays with Maury and in the Wisdom of Maury. My father lost his mother at a very young age. And he was about 7 or 8 when she passed away. And of course, he was very close to her. So he had this incredible tragedy and this incredible sense of loss in his life as a young boy. And maybe other people might have reacted differently, but for him, it opened him up to the suffering of other people and the humanity of all people. And this is a theme, something that he talked about. He talks about it in The Wisdom of Maury. He talks about it in Tuesdays with Maury, that was consistent all throughout his life. But he realized, I guess he was probably in his late 40s, that even 40 years after her death, that he had never properly grieved for her. And he went through a big psychotherapy session, you know, as a man in his 50s or late 40s or 50s to grieve for his mother. And, you know, it had a huge impact on him. And this catalyzed him to understand how important it was to integrate therapy into people's lives. One when he was younger, meaning late 40s. And then there's one in The Wisdom of Maury where he talks about very specifically, he actually would have been older at that time. He actually would have been near 60 at that time. So there's actually two different episodes in his life where he goes through therapy to deal with this intense tragedy, this intense sadness of losing his mother. But I really think that that was the catalyst that allowed him to be so connected to humanity and so connected to the suffering of people. And, you know, thank God we don't all have to go through what he went through, but hopefully we can learn from what he is trying to teach us.
Well, the tragedy he went through with losing his mother at a young age, some of the most compassionate people I know, Rob, have had profound sadness over life-altering loss. And the saddest people that I've known have been turned into the most compassionate souls that I know. You're absolutely right. I think that at a young age, he was going to take his own challenges and make the world and the community a better place and a more compassionate and loving place. Everything he did was based on love and compassion. And if you lead with those two qualities, you're going to transcend race. You're going to transcend sexual preference, orientation. You're going to talk about what he envisioned as a world where there's a shared humanity.
Yep, I think you've hit the nail on the head. That's exactly right.
Your father has been a co-teacher in my classroom for many years, and reading and rereading Tuesdays with Maury, and I feel like I've gotten to know you, your mom, you know, your brother John, and your dad. It's like you guys have become part of my family because of the fact that, you know, you've been such a part of my academic career, and his teachings have influenced me personally. I try to incorporate what he does, and I try to make myself a better teacher based on, and if I can strive to be an eighth as good as your dad was as a teacher, I'd be very happy with that.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful to hear. I would suggest that you don't need comparisons or anything like that. I'm sure from talking to you, it sounds like you do a wonderful job in your classroom, and whatever influences you bring in there, if they're Maury or if they're whatever other influences, it sounds like you're doing a great job. So we really appreciate it. And, you know, I'm trying to get the word out about the wisdom of Maury. It's hard these days to get as much attention as what happened with Tuesdays with Maury, but I'm doing my best. We did get some coverage when it was first released a year and a half ago.
Well, it's a book that I think can have a positive impact in academia, in agencies that deal with older people, places that deal with development across the lifespan, courses. This is a book that, I mean, you could take any one of those chapters, Rob, and you can make a curriculum out of it because he has so much detail in each chapter. Now, the book, I think you've recommended that for people to read it, kind of just take their time with it, read a chapter at a time, do the reflection questions, journal, take the suggestions that your father had to process each chapter and to integrate that into your way of life.
Absolutely. As I said, the book is filled with all sorts of different ideas and stories and poetry and newspaper clippings and quotes from different authors that my father liked. There's so much in there. It's not really a book that's meant to just be picked up and read cover to cover. Though, you know, you can do that if you like, and I think you would get a lot out of it. But it's really meant to be reflected on and the story sort of savored and, you know, make notes in the margins and put bookmarks in there. And as you said, journal, make notes to yourself, think about how you feel about what you've read and if it's useful for you. The book is really meant to be taken in that way, in a personal way. And getting back to what you said, my primary focus in editing was to keep my father's voice. In addition to that, I wanted people to feel like as much as possible, like this was a conversation they were having with my father. So I used all sorts of things. I used all sorts of things to try and jar people out of thinking, oh, this is just a book, to this is something different. So for example, there's color that runs all throughout the book. The different pages have different sort of like side color on them, or we use different fonts. And actually, some of the pages use this handwritten font. It's not actually my father's handwriting, but it looks like it's handwritten, you know. Mm-hmm. And I put a lot of pictures of dad and of the family in the book because I wanted other people to feel like, oh, this is like a scrapbook from this person's family. Like I can really make a personal connection with this person's family. You know, that was all done intentionally to try and give people the feeling of this is something that you sort of read and enjoy and live with and go back, dip into and think about, not just a book you read from cover to cover and then put down, you know.
And you mentioned there was a story too behind the photos of
oh, right.
Your photographer, Heather, I believe.
Right. So the last photo of me kissing my father. So there was a photographer who was actually a graduate student in my father's department, sociology at Brandeis, when my father got ill. So my father and she made an arrangement where she would come to the house and she would photograph him during his illness. And she has these wonderful photographs, including a wonderful photograph of Mitch and my father, which has been seen by tens of millions of people because it was in some of the original printings of Tuesdays with Maury. And it's been used by TV programs all over the world when they're talking about Tuesdays with Maury. So her photos have really been seen by a huge number of people. And she has a huge number of photos of my father, some of which have not been seen so much. And her name is Heather Pillar, P-I-L-L-A-R. I think her website is heatherpillar.com. But if you search Heather Pillar, you can certainly find her. And she just released a photo book of my father, of these photos that she took while he was ill. And many of them have never been seen. There's three photos of Mitch and my dad, one of which is very well known and the other two are not so well known. And Mitch was very complimentary. He got a copy of the book. Heather sent him a copy of the book and he was overjoyed to see these photos of my father and also all of them, but of course the ones of him and dad together. And, you know, just the whole setting, you can really feel it. They're all taken, pretty much all of them are taken in the house where my father was staying while he was ill the last 16 months of his life. If you look Heather Pillar, Maury Schwartz, it'll pop up. She's having showings and photo exhibitions all across the East Coast now. She's based in Massachusetts, of course, where my dad lived. So there's been a lot in Massachusetts, but other areas around there as well. And if you're interested in photos of my dad, you can find her book. You can just search Heather Pillar, P-I-L-L-A-R, Maury Schwartz. It'll certainly pop right up.
And I'll make sure that her website gets in the program notes so that people can access that. And in addition to Utica University, I teach artists at the Pratt Munson School of Art here in Utica, New York. I teach a couple of psychology courses to fulfill their social science and liberal arts requirement. And they also enrich my life as much as my Utica University students do. So they've also become a part of my community. And for that, I'm grateful. Rob, is there anything else you want to add?
I think we covered it. I think I was very glad you reminded me of the photos and of Heather Pillar's work because that's very recent. She just released that book. And I'm so happy that she did because it's got a whole breadth of photos. And yeah, I mean, you were on point with all of the insights into my dad's work. So I think we covered it very well. And thank you so much for your wonderful work and your attention to my father's work.
Thank you for what you're doing to keep his legacy alive and also for the meaningful work that you're doing, you know, in the entertainment world and, you know, in terms of social justice world. You are your father's son for sure.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And if our listeners want to get in touch with you or find out more about your work and purchase the Wisdom of Maury, what's the best way for them to do that, Rob?
Right. Well, I'm sure you'll have it in your notes as well, but we have the website, wisdomofmaury.com. Anybody who writes to me through that website, we always respond. All the links to purchase the book on whatever site you want to purchase it on are there on wisdomofmaury.com. It's available in bookstores still, but I would say the easiest way is to go onto our website and click through one of the links.
Okay. And I'll make sure, again, like I said, all of that will get into the program notes. So with that, Rob, thank you so much for being such a valuable guest contributor. I truly enjoyed our conversation. I'm grateful you were able to make the time to share space with me tonight.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.